That's right.
Volume up and get ready. Welcome to my podcast.
Usual Friday. So, Mary, thank you for giving us this opportunity to interview you. I've seen a lot about you on Twitter. So, you know, let's tell our audience a little bit about you.
Okay. Yeah, you know, on Twitter, I'm pretty big on Twitter. I probably should do a little bit more somewhere else. But anyways, me, I am retired, actually disabled. I used to work as a registered nurse. I had a wonderful, wonderful nursing career. Lots and lots of sad things happened, but lots and lots of good things happened too. So it was really a nice thing. When I had to, when I became disabled, I had to give up my nursing career, and that was really a hard thing to do. And there came a point when I thought, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And then I thought, well, I have all these notes that I kept back from 1990, the year 1990, when my youngest son was sick and was going through a cancer battle, and he was in the hospital for 7.5 months. And I thought, okay, I still have, and I lost my oldest son. He strangled on his umbilical cord. So I have one son that is alive, and he has a lot of problems. He has PTSD with everything that's happened with his younger brother. That said, I had all these notes that I just kept journaling every day what was going on, and I wanted to put them into digital format so that my son would have a digital format, a notebook with digital format printed pages. And then from that, I actually wrote a memoir.
I was going to say, because I can tell in your voice how sad you are.
I was just doing a live event over on Facebook, and so I kind of got teary-eyed with that, and I'm gonna get that way here too. But I did write When Angels Fly. When Angels Fly has received, it's a multi-award winning book, and rightly so. It helps people in all walks of life. It helps people who have children in the hospital, whether they have a child with cancer or whatever they have. It helps parents to pick their battles, for instance, because you don't want to alienate the nursing staff and the medical staff. You want to be able to have a good working relationship with them. So, you know, if your child is having pain and they need to do something about that, that's a higher priority. You have an antibiotic hung on your child an hour late, that's okay, because you don't know what's happened that other kids needed, or they may have had a serious thing go on where they were trying to save a child. You don't know what's going on, and it's not your business to know what's going on the hospital unit. But again, that's something that you wouldn't pick a battle with or complain about. So you have to pick your battles. And it also speaks of, this is the When Angels Fly book still, it speaks of domestic violence and the cycle of violence and how I was finally able to leave that cycle of violence. And
an erotic novel by Kyle Cannon, The Photographer Story, now available on Amazon.
It also gives validation to what parents feel when their child is suffering a really horrible, horrible disease, with my son having cancer and being misdiagnosed for quite some time. My feelings that there were times when I hated God. I was so angry at him. But then I always came back to him. I always came back, and that did help me out a lot. It does speak a lot about my son's cancer battle and things that happened, but it also speaks of that he actually, even though he died, he won in the end because his battle with cancer, he fought it, and he was cancer-free when he passed.
Wow.
Which, now I'm up to like 17 books, and my most recent release is actually one that I was able, the first one is When Angels Fly, and it's written with two pen names, S. Jackson and A. Raymond, and it's on sale for 99 cents right now, but that's beside the point. What I have most recent is Sammy Here at Age 5. That one is totally different. First of all, it's written from the perspective of a 5-year-old. And it's authored by myself and Ariel Schmidt and my son, Gene D. Donnelly. And it just talks about, it's a memoir. It's full of positivity, positive everything. Even though he has a big battle and he dies in the end, it's full of fun shenanigans that the kids got into as they were growing up, just different memories that Sam had and my son had. And it just makes it for a fun book, if you can call that a fun book. I think it's fun. I think it's lighthearted. I think that it is a moment of sadness because the child, my son, dies, but he becomes a hero.
Of course.
He's a hero. He became a hero because he did win his cancer battle. So, yes, he died in the end, but he won his cancer battle. So, a little bit of a synopsis on that. Kids can get hungry sometimes while on chemo, says 5-year-old Sammy, having a good day despite the malignant tumor invading his brain. Based on true events from the 1980s, and this book actually is in the year 1990. Sammy's story is imagined by his mother and brother as if the young boy might tell it himself. And we did use what him and his brother, their hijinks, we did do it. So it's truly Sam's voice coming through. The result is gripping. Told in two parts, Sammy's account first invites us into the everyday American, middle American lives of a mom and her two boys. Sammy's a sweet, good-hearted kid, even as he faces the most difficult challenges in part two, cancer survived. Here, Sammy talks us through hospital trips and procedures, the hardest parts, as well as moments of simple joy. It is not always possible to survive such a grim diagnosis, so Sammy and his family must embrace the smaller victories from one day to the next. Finally, our young hero is given one last opportunity to find his own unique path toward triumph. Listen closely as Sammy tells us all what matters most. That is the biggest thing. Listen closely as Sammy tells us all what matters most. He does that in a manner of, he lets you know that family is important. Kindness is important. Belief in a better place after when you're sick and you're going through so much pain and agony of the cancer battle. But, you know, he knew about heaven. He knew Jesus. He was right. He came forth to me and told me two times, I want to go to heaven, Mom. At 5 years of age.
Wow.
Pretty smart kid.
Absolutely, I'd say so. Wow. It's quite a story. I mean, yeah, I haven't even read the book.
It is It's a short story. Less than 2 hour read. It's 96 total pages, but out of those pages, 12 of them were actually photographs. So
yeah. Wow.
It's a short story. But it's filled with a lot of funny things that happen.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's important that it be relatable to kids. Not just young kids, but older kids. I would say the book is geared for those age 14 and older. Those who are younger than 14 would also benefit greatly from the book, Sammy Hero at age 5. But they would truly need some parental guidance with that, because there would be things that they wouldn't understand, and then they would need to talk that out. So it would be a book for the younger kids to read with a parent.
And
siblings. Siblings would benefit as well, and the parents as well, because they need to know certain things, whether your child has cancer or whether they have something else that's a long-term life-threatening condition.
So I understand what you're saying. You see, the question that I wanted to ask you as well is that I know that you say that, you know, children need to understand if they're going through that. How would you address that to a child, like, so young? I mean, that's quite powerful.
In what manner? Do you have a specific way you're questioning this?
How would you, you know, tell a young boy that they're dying of cancer?
I didn't.
Wow.
I didn't tell Sam that.
No, absolutely.
He told me.
Wow.
He told me at age 5 years old. He told me.
Wow. How did he?
And I told him.
Yeah.
I told him. Well, you might. It was right before he was going to have surgery on his lung to remove cancer, because it had been stage 4 and had spread when he was diagnosed. And in the pre-op area before he went in, it was just me and Sam and his nurse at a table desk writing. And Sam just looks at me and says, "I want to go to heaven, Mom." And I just looked at him and I had no words to say. And he repeated it, "I want to go to heaven, Mom." And finally, I was able to choke out that, well, we don't always get what we want in life, and you might just have to come back to me. Because I couldn't bear the thought of losing him. I'm sorry.
No. Honestly, this is what the show's about. The show is about, you know, telling your story.
So he did come back to me, and he went through a lot of problems afterwards. Things happened, and it would have been better had he passed on the surgical table. He would not have had to endure what he did endure afterwards, because it was something that no child should ever have to endure.
No, a mother shouldn't have to see her child in that situation either. I can relate, because I've got a little boy, and believe me, I do think of all these sorts of things every day. Because I'm seeing things on the news, like, you know, young kids are dying with cancer, and I'm thinking, well, I hope my boy's going to be okay. So, in a sense, I can't relate to how you are personally feeling now, but I can relate as a parent.
Yes, parents can relate. They can't, unless you've lost a child, you can't relate to that. There's no way you can even try to understand what a parent feels after they have lost a child, and I've lost two. There's just absolutely no way. And I don't want any more people to join this club of sorts, is what I call it, because the king of loss is truly the king of loss. I have lost a little brother, and that was devastating. I have lost my parents. That was horrible. I have lost a lot of family, and it's been hard. But nothing at all compares to losing a child. And my oldest, struggling with his cord, the only thing that I can take away from that is positive, other than the fact that he went to heaven, he was born straight to heaven. But he didn't have to suffer long.
No.
But then here comes Sam, and he suffered for over a year. And you have to wonder why children can suffer this much. Why that's allowed.
I tend to, you know, go into depth a lot, and sometimes I think to myself, like, you know, we're in 2019. Why is there not a cure?
There should be a cure, and you know, there's some conspiracy theories on that and everything. I personally, I think that some cancer is cured, simply because of my medical background and with using stem cells. I think that some cancers are cured, but it's just not ready for the public yet. It's not something that's very cheap to do. And even though money should not factor in, from what I have studied and my knowledge, I do believe that some cancer, not all of it by any means, but some, has been cured. If it's caught in time, and if someone has appropriate stem cells to help with that situation. And I'm actually speaking more of the leukemias. That's using stem cells to help fight that is a huge thing. And I have read of a lot of results of that. So I see that that will probably be coming out more, but it'll probably be eight or 9 years before it does. It seems like for something very important, it should be out there in the public right away, but it doesn't happen that way. It has to go through different X, Y, and Z before it's actually then put into trials. So, and they're just starting the trials now.
Yeah. I was going to ask you as well, is there any family history of cancer?
Yes, there is. What Sam had was unusual, and his was different, but my father had colon cancer. I myself have had colon cancer removed. I have had a lung cancer removed. It was, they had to remove a lung, actually. What happened is my neuroendocrine system decided that it was going to do some weird little things with the cells that it was putting out, and it gave me a typical carcinoma, which cannot be treated with chemo or radiotherapy. The only cure is removal. Removal was the cure. So I was cured of that. And then I also had cancer starting in my uterus, and actually the removal of that, it was just starting, and so it didn't spread anywhere, and the removal was the cure. So that's, I've had three. My father, my parents, I don't know, there's just cancer is everywhere.
Of course, absolutely, I totally agree. So let's go a little bit back into your background of you being a nurse.
Okay,
tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, well, I kind of went up the ladder. I started as a nurse aide, then went to med aid, on up to LPN, RN, bachelor's degree, all of that. I did a lot of, I placed a lot of PICC lines. I don't know if you know what those are, but they're,
I don't.
They are an IV line that's placed in the upper arm, and it's inserted all the way to just outside the atrium, the right atrium of the heart, so that you have a good line for any kind of medicine that's hard on veins. It's a good line to have for IV things that are hard on vein walls, so you're not having to get stuck all the time. Now, this is a little, this is just a nursing medical thing, tidbit. So it's about 2 centimeters. You want it to, the tip to be about 2 centimeters from the right atrium of the heart. So that's your upper right chamber.
Yeah.
That said, just throwing this out there, think of a 2-liter bottle of pop. That is how much blood goes through a person's heart every minute.
Wow, that's incredible.
That is.
I don't tend to think into depth like that. Wow.
That is how much goes through the heart every minute. So having a line up there, having the tip up there, means that you can receive chemo or anything that is really hard on a vein. You can receive any medication of any kind, and it's going to automatically go throughout, and it's not going to hurt or damage your vein. So that's one thing that's cool.
Wow.
I think that that's really cool. And I did that for a long time. Plus, I did chemotherapy. I did pretty much anything that anybody needed, cancer-wise or non-cancer-wise. I did a lot of infusion therapy. I did quite a bit of, well, at one point I decided I wanted to start doing travel nursing, so I did that. Traveled to Colorado, Seattle, Washington. Actually, we lived out of state for about 8 years.
Wow.
My husband just went with me. I have had a lot of great, wonderful nursing experiences. I did have to hang up my hat, though. I had to hang it up back in
well, it must have been tough for you.
January of 2013. It was very hard.
January
2013.
Wow. You know, Mary, thank you ever so much for giving us this opportunity to interview you. You know, you're such an inspiration. You can just tell within your voice, honestly.
Thank you.
You are absolutely welcome. Is there anything that you want to personally get across?
You know, I want people to understand that there are positives. You may have a child who is gravely ill and who's going to die, but there are positives that can come from that. The death is still the king of loss, and it's you're going to live that day in and day out. That's not going to change. But you will have the empathy to help someone who loses a child. For instance, I have a friend who miscarried a baby girl last December. And I got in touch with her, and I have been helping her through her loss, giving her validation. Yes, her baby had a soul. Yes, 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 on all these different things. And I think that that is a person who is able to take from their own loss to help other parents. I think that's a good thing. Walling it up, trying to block it off, not talking, just keeping an unhappy face, that doesn't work. And let me tell you, people can be smiling and laughing and joking, but that doesn't mean that they're laughing and joking inside. Because losing a child is the worst. It's the king of loss. It's the biggest thing. It's out of order loss. But positives can happen. And it's all in a mindset. And like I've said, I've helped her more recently. Another girl I know, she just miscarried a baby. She hadn't even announced that she was pregnant yet. And she miscarried the baby. And I've just started talking with her, helping her with it, helping her to use coping mechanisms. Also, for instance, the one back in December, I've helped her. I explained to her something that my family does as a tradition. I buy angels for my boys every year. I buy a new angel for each of them. They're matching angels. And I write the year on them and their names, and they go on the holiday tree. And that's how they are incorporated into Christmas every year.
Wow.
And so I suggested them start a tradition. That way your children will always remember the one that was lost, your brother, the little brother or the little sister. Mm. And you can just go, you know, do that every year. Do some type of tradition and keep your child's memory alive, because that is what it comes down to. That is what a bereaved parent needs. They need their child's memory kept alive.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And that is absolutely fantastic that you do that. Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you ever so much. I really do appreciate you coming onto the show and telling your story. And don't worry about crying, because, you know, this is what the show is about. It's about telling your personal story and, you know, getting your message across. So thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And
I appreciate that.
That's all right. I'll catch up with you after the show.
Okay.
You take care.
You too.
We are on air. It's Talk Back Friday.